Welcome to episode 201 of the GTO on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop of everything 5G. Cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by Lawrence Tyson Strategy. I'm Will Townsend. Joining me again this week is fellow analyst Ancha Sag. Let's get started with my first topic, and I want to talk about T-Mobile and what they're doing with channel partners to lower the entry for 5G connected PCs and fixed wireless access solutions. I know you're going to want to weigh in on this as well. In fact, in the press release, Patrick Moorhead, our fearless leader, was quoted supporting this initiative. But at a very high level, what T-Mobile is doing, they're working with two of the largest IT distributors in the United States, Ingram Micro and Tech Data Celex. And what they're doing is they're rolling out a Partner Plus program. And what this is, it's a subsidy program that actually lowers the cost of PCs that have integrated 5G mobile broadband modems in that. And then they're also partnering with Cradlepoint on doing the same with some of the fixed wireless access CPE products that Cradlepoint offers. And it's actually pretty significant on the device side, up to $400 off. And that basically neutralizes the adder for the mobile broadband modem. And then with the subsidy credit on the 5G Cradlepoint solutions, it's up to $700 off. And a very high level within the press release of T-Mobile issue, they're stating that businesses could see up to a $1,600 savings per router adapter. And again, over $400 per connected PC. Now, I think this is great. Cost has certainly been an obstacle, but also historically, there have been challenges around provisioning these devices, more so on the PC side than not necessarily the FWA solutions that are deployed within businesses and enterprises. But I know you've got some comments here to weigh in. Let's start first on your take with the devices. Is this going to move the needle, do you think?
I've thought about it. I just feel it should. But the problem is just throwing money at the problem is not the solution.
I agree.
There needs to be a certain level of education. And honestly, like, there needs to be a marketing program. For example, let's talk about like our government. When we have programs where we give people money, we literally have to advertise that we are giving away money so that people use that money, right? Mm-hmm. So just there needs to be an awareness for this program. Obviously, you and I are doing our part here to make that possible. But I just think that this is a very underneath the sheets kind of program. So I feel like there needs to be some kind of top level marketing that funnels into this, because I just feel like first of all, no one's going to even know that they're giving $400. But even if you tell someone, I'm going to give you $400 towards a new PC, let's say a 5G connected Copilot Plus PC, those are going to start like $1,200, $1,300. So you're going to be getting under $1,000. That's huge. But then people are going to ask, what's my plan going to cost me? And why, like, people are still going to ask. So I think that there needs to be a really solid campaign to explain to people, we're going to give you a really good discount. You're going to pay for service, but you're going to love it. And the truth is, I have yet to meet someone who uses a 5G connected PC for a good amount of time and doesn't absolutely love it. It's a great experience. The problem has always been the cost, right? So throwing money at people, I think, does help in some ways, but also you need to like really educate them.
I agree. Obviously, there's pull through the channel. These distributors are going to be working with value-added resellers and others that are, you know, pulling product, you know, from them to sell to end customers. And so there's a procurement sales motion that goes on there. But you're right. There needs to be, I agree, there needs to be a program that basically highlights the fact that this is available, right? And it's just not the initial cost of the device. It's you're paying for the ongoing service as well. Obviously, it's T-Mobile is going to focus on this. And I'm sure there'll be, within their storefronts, their retail storefronts, there'll be signage and that sort of thing to promote this. But this is really, I think, it's a business play because they're working with IT distribution partners to do this. I do think there'll be some end users that'll find it interesting as well. But yeah, it definitely requires a push-pull, but I think it's a step in the right direction. And again, I think what needs to also be really scrutinized It's just how easy is it to provision the stuff in the field, like self-provisioning, right? And that's always been problematic when, let's say, a connected PC is sent out. And then it's,
you know, obnoxiously easy now. I feel like the reason why this program exists is because it has become so much easier to do. When I signed up for the T-Mobile program, where they're giving 90 days free service on the Surface Pro 9 5G, it was literally just like, type in your T-Mobile.
Oh, cool.
I didn't have to talk to anybody. I didn't have to go through any ridiculous workflows. It was log into your T-Mobile account. Here's 90 free days. And then if you wanted to pay more for more service, you could. But it was like really simple. It was like, go to your Wi-Fi like setup on the PC. Yeah. And then one of your options is eSIM. And then you go to eSIM and then you like log in. So it's gotten obnoxiously easier. Like it was so bad before. It was totally justified to people not wanting to do it. Now there's no excuses.
You heard it here, our viewers and listeners. That's great news, my friend. Hey, let's go to your first topic. And I was at Black Hat this week. I was there Monday, it was the travel day. And then I was there Tuesday, Wednesday, and I was flying out and this news started breaking. But you want to talk about a 5G baseband vulnerability that was surfaced at the big security event this week in Vegas.
Yeah, I followed this because I wasn't at Black Hat. And I was really surprised because I didn't actually know that this was something that happened. But basically, like many 5 vulnerabilities, it actually kicks you down to a older protocol, which is less secure. So this is really about the fact that users' devices still need to support the older bands. Like one of the good reasons why we left 2G and 3G was security. And I think with time, 4G will also be dropped off eventually because it's also a security vulnerability. But basically this was a tool that they created called 5G Base Checker, which went in and checked out the basebands of many different phones from Samsung, MediaTek, Qualcomm, made by manufacturers like Google, Oppo, OnePlus, Motorola, and Samsung. And they basically were able to trick these devices into connecting to a fake cell tower and send credible phishing messages or use a malicious website with this capability. And this base station would only be possible if they were able to get kicked down to a lower G. And they basically sent, ahead of announcing this, like proper researchers, they helped companies patch these vulnerabilities in advance and then announced vulnerabilities, which there were 12 of. This looks like Samsung and Google already said that they have already patched these flaws, but MediaTek and Qualcomm did not respond for comments. I have a strong feeling they probably already have, because MediaTek and Qualcomm are two big baseband providers. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see as this matures how well addressed it actually has been. But this 5G base checker is already available on GitHub if you want to see if there are any 5G vulnerabilities in your baseband. But overall, Black Hat is a security conference, so it's not a huge surprise that something like 5G modems would be something that they would be looking into and following the right procedures around notifying and allowing for patching for announcement. They probably discovered this a year ago, and it probably took them a year to get somebody on board.
Yeah. What's interesting about Black Hat, so I attended this year. It's been several years since I've been. It's an interesting show because it is focused on practitioners, security practitioners. So you do have the really large infrastructure providers there. Even CrowdStrike was there, interestingly enough, and Palo Alto and Infoblox, you name it. But it's very training focused. There's a lot of ethical hacking that's going on. I didn't catch this before I left, but this could have been an output of ethical hacking. And it really highlights how Black Hat is different than RSNA conference and other cybersecurity conferences, and that it's very practitioner focused. And even as I sat for lunch the couple of days I was there, the conversations I was able to have with people that are in the industry that are not necessarily CISO level, but these are SecOps professionals, and they're there to learn. They're there to learn not only in the classroom, but from others. And it's just a very interesting conference. And I did enjoy my time there. And I think your topic's a great example of some of the things that
you travel with a burner.
I did not. Maybe I should start traveling with a burner phone. But hey, man, let's go to my second topic. And I want to talk about Nokia. And they're partnering with Swisscom for drone emergency response and industrial use cases. Mm-hmm. This is something that you and I have talked about on a prior podcast. We've talked about Nokia focusing discreetly on drone. And what's interesting, this is for Swisscom's broadcasting business. So as I read through the article on Mobile World Live, it was talking about how Nokia has basically prepared 300 units. They call them a drone in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, it's to support public safety. And we know how that can be done with law enforcement and with fire response and that sort of thing, but also for infrastructure inspections as well. So utility lines and that sort of thing. And, but even beyond that, you're seeing drones controlled by 5G disrupting industries like window washing. And I'll just share a funny story. So I was in Vegas for Black Hat. I went the weekend before, got to see the Dead Experience, which, by the way, an incredible show.
So you're still Dead and Company.
Yeah, Dead and Company with John Mayer smashed his finger in a car door 2 days before. Didn't miss a beat. But long story short, after the concert, the next day, I joined my brother and his wife and my wife at the Cosmopolitan. We were watching these window washers go up and down the building, and everyone was talking about how, oh my God, it's going to be dangerous. They must make six figures. Hey, guess what? Drone technology, we've talked about this in partnership with T-Mobile. There's a company that's basically disrupting that industry with drones and big water jets and big tanks. So this is, I think, we're going to see more and more maturity with respect to drone applications and 5G. And I really believe this is an area where Nokia can really focus its effort and be differentiated. So don't know if you caught the article, but would love to get your insight.
I did, because I was going to make it a topic of mine, and then I saw that you...
I stole it from you. Yeah.
It's okay. Well, you did your topics before I did something. I can't really blame you. What I was going to say is, yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I thought, one, Swisscom is definitely one of the more advanced European carriers, so it makes sense they would do this. And it also makes sense that Nokia would be someone who would do this, because this feels like a very private 5G kind of standalone application. So it feels like a good fit for both carriers. Do you know what drones they're using? Because that's the one thing I didn't see when I was looking it up.
Yeah.
I know Nokia doesn't need drones.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of detail there. So then on the details, something that we could definitely, you know, both dig into. But I would assume that they're going to be agricultural grade technology, obviously for the distance, battery life, and that sort of thing. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And just wanted to see, I wasn't sure, sorry, I wanted to know if you had any, I couldn't find any.
These are your garden variety DJI drones that you like to fly around and take pictures in Hawaii with and California. For sure. But hey man, let's go to your second topic. And this is great news. You want to talk about Vodafone UK, and they're going to start offering 5G standalone to enterprises.
Yeah. So this is actually based on research that they did. I kept seeing this statistic, so I'm going to repeat it. They said that 39% of UK companies are ready to invest in 5G standalone today, with 14% making the move within 12 months, demonstrating an immediate appetite for next generation digital services. So this is basically them saying, we think that 40% of UK customers or UK companies want this service, so we're lighting it up. They already have standalone, I think, in 300 cities across the UK. They call this standalone service 5G Ultra. They were the first ones to brand standalone service. I still think AT&T and Verizon are going to do that too, by the way. Maybe even T-Mobile, but we'll see what happens. But they said that they are committed to expanding capabilities and capacity. They talk about it being lower latency, more reliable. And they really said that the big reason why a lot of businesses were interested in is the 93% reliability connection for critical applications. Basically, this is for all kinds of businesses, from enterprise all the way down to small and medium business. Yeah, they are the first ones to launch standalone in the UK in 2023. And they just feel like there's a lot of appetite for this upgrade. That's going to be 25% better battery life going on standalone. Faster fees, having more reliable connections in busy places. So they see this as a positive. I think it's good for them to talk about how they're going to grow this. They're already talking about some of the existing networks and slicing companies that have already taken advantage of this network. They talked about ITN, UK Power Networks, C, and even a gaming application for network slicing as well. So basically, they have a lot of points, and it seems like they are ready to sign customers.
But it also sounds like that they're highlighting use cases that shine on standalone, right? Like the gaming. Okay, cool. Because I think if they didn't do that, then it's going to be a very difficult thing to sell, just because we've had NSA and SA, and this tweener has really lowered people's expectations on the true promise of 5G.
Yeah, they talked about how they had a pilot with the UK power networks showing how network slicing can improve efficiency of critical national infrastructure. And then they showed multiple events where they were able to live broadcast over 5G or create a slice for payment terminals. So they have really good proof points. Do you think the gaming one might be the weakest? Because that's very consumer-y. It is still business to consumer, but I feel like most of the gaming companies are not providing connectivity as a service. Maybe that's something that will happen down the road, as something I believed would be possible with 5G.
Yeah.
Still hasn't really happened, but I think there's a chance.
Yeah, I think another opportunity, we're talking about slicing, is security slices for determinant security provisions. T-Mobile has done that with their SASE solution in the United States. And I expect that's going to be an important consideration for enterprises because, hey, they're having to safeguard data if they're in regulated industries such as healthcare, financial services. That's going to be really important. Security is important all the time. We were just talking about that baseband vulnerability, but I think that's something that can be easily monetized by Vodafone because T-Mobile's been able to do it here in the US. But hey, with that, I'm going to hit my third and final topic. And I talk quite a bit about low Earth orbit satellite. We've talked about Starlink. We talk about AST Space Mobile. I caught the news, it was an Informa article around China and how they're finally getting into the LEO space race. And it's interesting because China seems to be the country that's always beating its chest. We're first, we've got more 5G towers lit up, we've got this done and this done. But they seem to be a little bit late to the LEO satellite party. So the details are around an orbit that was achieved on Monday, which marked China's entry into the mass constellation space race. I'm not even going to begin to pronounce the satellite launch center in Western China, but the initial swag was 18 satellites for the Kuaishan constellation, as reported by local media. So you've got a lot of companies involved in this, as you might expect. Shanghai Spacecom Satellite Technology is building the satellites. Their goal is to launch 108. They're saying this year, which that's a pretty short runway to do it.
Yeah.
But their goal is to basically provide global network coverage for subscribers in China by 2027. And the total number of satellites that they're targeting would be about 15,000 by 2030. So very interesting. Not surprised to see this. Boy, we're going to be putting a lot of things in space here when you just look at just what we're doing alone in the United States and then looking at what Europe's doing and now China. I don't know if you caught this news, but what are your thoughts? Can China be competitive?
I genuinely thought China would be further along than they are, to be honest with you. I also think that like China's space program has also had some setbacks. Having the ability to launch rockets efficiently is a key component of being able to build good LEO networks. They've definitely had some interesting launches as of late. And yeah, I just think that like China, they just operate on different time scale, but sometimes they run into issues and they get delayed. I think they're delayed, to be honest with you. I really was expecting them to be further along than they are. And yeah, I think that's a pretty tight window for them to get this done by the end of the year. I have a feeling that they'll probably stop talking about this and let whatever schedule happens. But ultimately, it's a state-funded enterprise and they'll be able to do whatever they want, however they want, even if it's using questionable rocket technology.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting because when you look at just the mobile infrastructure that's been deployed, and if you believe the numbers on brand infrastructure and that sort of thing, it makes you wonder how badly do they need satellite coverage if they basically just mow along and
think about the rest of China. It's a huge country, right? It's very similar to the US in the sense that you have really dense population centers and then you just open expand
Yeah. And you've got the special economic zones, right, that were set up 2-3 decades ago. And
there's a new one.
They're certainly, yeah. I was going to say, they're certainly fibered out and built out from a mobility standpoint. But you're absolutely right. This will likely give them coverage in those extremely rural areas that are not within those NCZs.
And it will help them maybe potentially build out some of their new regions as well, because Harbin is likely going to be a very big center for China moving forward.
I think they're building it.
They already have some stuff in very far eastern China that they're trying to modernize and make like the new Shenzhen.
Yeah, and they're building stuff in the China Sea as well, like floating cities. Yeah,
you can connect to it.
Yeah, it would be a great application for Leo for sure. Hey, we're whipping through this. Let's hit your third and final, because I know you're going to go fishing this afternoon, and I'm expecting to catch some good fish.
I was complaining that nobody's emailing or tweeting today.
That's right, buddy. But you want to talk about the Pentagon. We've talked about Future G in the past, and you want to talk something about, they're disclosing some details on.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let you take it.
So what's interesting is I didn't know that Future G had been moved into the DOD's chief information office last year. So that was an interesting update, but that makes sense because that's where they should be. But basically, they are looking at all different types of 5G applications for different ways to advance Wi-Fi. And one of those is they are deploying Anduril made. So Anduril is a defense contractor. They built these towers that are using, quote, tactical radios, meaning that they don't have inherent 5G capability, but they definitely can. And that there is the ability to do high resolution, high frame rate video through these video towers to protect bases in Africa. So AFRICOM will be the one who will be utilizing these towers, but there will be other applications we've talked about in previous podcasts, NATO exercises, and they're talking about using these and using 5G in Latvia with local carriers for 5G military applications. 5G is very much alive with the U.S. Department of Defense, and specifically for improving security in this situation. But it was really interesting. I actually follow Anduril pretty closely. They do a lot of autonomous drones, and they wanted a contract with the Australian government for an underwater drone. They're doing a lot of stuff, and I did not know that they were building these towers for security purposes. I think the applications for 5G in defense continue to grow. And it seems like the next will be looked by Future G, and they will transition us into 6G as well. But it's very clear that the U.S. Department of Defense is, and the Pentagon is very serious about enhancing capabilities with the next generation of wireless connectivity.
For sure. And I spent some time with Booz Allen and their work with the U.S. Navy and what they're doing to equip naval ships and probably submarines and whatnot with 5G communication technology as well, and really replace comms that are very antiquated. I think it's interesting that you mentioned Latvia, because I'll be headed to Riga, the capital, in October. Yeah, for 5G Tech Retory. I'll be moderating panels there again. It's my fifth or sixth time there. I'm a founding father. Patrick Moorhead, our fearless leader, continues to ask me, when am I getting the key to Riga? And I'm hoping to bring that home, Patrick, at the end of October this year. But hey, my friend, it's been another great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. Anyone out there like to provide insights on a specific topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will's at Will Townsend and I'm at Anshul Sag. We hope you have a great weekend. Please tune in next.